This is Kent Seal Junior School Radio Club documentary about the 1953 flood. The last part continues in a moment when we look at how Cathy might cope with a flood today. Kent Seal Junior School Radio Club documentary about the 1953 flood.
The question that everybody asks is, could the flood happen again? Unfortunately, the answer is most definitely yes. As we now live in a period of rapid climate change and global warming, the risk of another flood is shortened considerably from one chance in 150 years in 1953 to one in 35 years now. Estimates say a similar size flood would kill at least 10 times more people and the devastation would be enormous. Can we ever be sure that weather and tidal conditions will not combine during any winter to produce, out of the vast grey waste of the North Atlantic, a great surge tide more deadly and disastrous than its predecessor, the Great Flood of 1953?
Bill Snow, the Castle Point Council emergency officer, came in to see us and he helped explain how the floods of this scale happened.
We're going to talk a little bit about flooding, really, specifically flooding that happened in Canby 50 odd years ago. Now, at that time, they didn't particularly know that the flood was going to happen. They knew they had very high tides and they had bad weather. They didn't know the flood was going to happen. But today, they do know. We know 2 days in advance before the flood comes along. First thing is tides. You've seen the tide come in and out, haven't you? You've all been on the beach and seen the tide come in and out. Anyone know what makes the tides do that? Go on.
Isn't it something to do with the moon?
Yes. And if you've got the sun, and then much further out here you've got the earth, and then going round and round the earth is the moon. And that whole lot goes round and round the sun, yes? So there's the earth, and as that goes round and round the sun, the moon is going round and round the earth like that in a little spiral, all the way round forevermore. Gravity is what stops me falling off the planet, doesn't it? Because otherwise, if I jumped, I'd just go up and up and up forevermore. But gravity is that special power that keeps everything on the earth. But because the moon's there, the moon attracts with its own gravity some of the earth and pulls it towards it, pulls it that way towards the moon. Now, it can't pull things off the earth like this school and everything else, but what it can pull off a little bit is the tide, the water on the sea. So when the moon's over there, the sea is high there, in other words, the tide is in. Now, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but that's the basics of it. Do you sort of understand that, really? When the moon has gone round and it's over here, then the tide bulges out that way over there. And therefore, if it's high tide there, it's low tide on that side. Now, that's on the scale of the Earth. But if you look at Britain, bear in mind the sun and the moon and the Earth. And now look at it that way. And what's going to happen with the tides? Well, you see, if the moon is over here, and it's gradually going round the earth like that, it's going to make the tides go one way or the other way. And all that water has got to get through that little narrow gap. And it can't. It builds up in height and then gradually squeezes its way through. So you get really high tides around here. And from when the tide is out, in other words, the moon's over the back there, to when the tide's in, when the moon's in front here, it makes the water move up and down by 6 metres. Now, on some days, the moon is much closer to the earth than other days, twice a year, roughly speaking. And if the sun and the moon and the earth all line up, when the moon is closest to the earth, you get extra, extra high tide. So you don't get 6 metres, you get 8 metres. If it's very windy, and there's lots of wind blowing this way as well, really strong wind, then that blows across the top of the water and whips it up and makes it even higher. So, in 1953, we had really high tides, lots of wind, low air pressure, the fact that all the water's whooshing down to try and get through the English Channel, can't all get through there, so some of it goes up the River Thames, and some of it breaks over the old seawall, and then it washes away the seawall, so it's all gone, and then all the water washes in. See, in 1953, the weatherman used to come onto the television and say, "Hello, everybody, I'm going to do the weather." And he used to have a little magnetic stick on things like fridge magnets and say, "It's going to be sunny over there, and it's going to be rainy down there, and it's going to be windy over there." And he had to guess. He had to look at the weather maps that they roughly drew and worked out, thought, "Well, that looks about right." And he had to guess. And he could only do it a few hours in advance, maybe a day in advance. And they didn't realise they were going to have this problem. Now, today, the reason why... we could still have a big flood, but the reason why we won't is because up in that sky are hundreds of satellites taking pictures, and not just pictures, but they also got laser beams that take, it's called LIDAR, and they look at the level of the sea and they can work out exactly the level of the sea. They've got satellite balloons, air balloons, and they got Met Office stations. Now they don't guess anymore, and 2 or 3 days in advance they can look at their computer information that predicts it and tries to work out what's going to happen. And they can look at the detail from the satellite, and they can plug it all in the computer, and the computer can tell them what's going to happen. So, this flood that happened in 1953, with all that extra water, 10 metres high, with all that wind and rain, instead of it being there at 6 or 8, it went to 10, and it flooded Canby. It could still happen today, but it's not likely to hurt anybody, because 2 days beforehand, I'll be one of the people ordering everybody off of Canby Island onto higher ground. And they might have to go, just like the people in Japan at the moment, they stay in our council office, some of the big schools further around, and if everybody comes off Canby, they will use this school as well. And you'll have people with camp beds laying out here, and trying to have a shower, and trying to sit on these little chairs, eating their dinner and all sorts.
Bill then told us about the building of a new seawall on Canby.
1972, what did they do on Canby? They decided, well, we can't have this flood again. They rebuilt a new seawall that's concrete, and it goes down into the ground like that, and then below that is steel sheet piling. Then they rebuilt a path along there, and then they put in a proper revetment there. That's all the blocks. They put much more earth coming out further, and they banked it like that. If we had the wind and the rain and the blowing on the sea and the high tide, the same as we had in 1953, is that water going to come in and flood that house? No, it's not. Because the water is only going to come up to there. So they've built a new seawall. Now, I've never seen a tide. Okay, the 1953 tide, and it burst over this old seawall and it flooded everybody. We've now got this lovely big seawall built in 1972, and that is not going to flood over there.
But what about the effects of global warming?
People think if all the ice melts, that the tide's going to flood over there. But the thing is, you see, okay, climate's changing a bit, but it has been changing for thousands and thousands of years, and the sea level has gradually been getting a tiny bit higher. Every 100 years it gets another inch or two higher. Okay? With global warming, instead of it going up at that speed, it might go a little bit quicker. But it would be 2,000 years' time. It would take 2,000 years from now, even if the temperature went up by 10 degrees, to melt all the ice on the polar caps, especially the Antarctic. It's 2 kilometres, 2,000 metres thick. It would take forever. So, we can't rule it out, global warming. We cannot rule it out. Climate change is the way the climate's changing. And in this country, climate change is where we're all getting these wetter winters. And you've all seen the programmes where villages and towns have been flooding and the rivers burst their banks. Now, that's water from the rainwater. Do you think that is going to flood Canby, that rainwater? It could do if it rained really, really heavy over Canby for a long, long time. But there's pipes underneath the ground, and then it goes to a pump station, which is a big underground chamber, and that's got a pipe in it. And this water that comes down here, and from the sky in rain, goes down there in the pump station back out to sea. And that makes no difference to the sea at all. If you pumped all that water in the sea, you wouldn't notice the sea level change at all.
What if something happened to the pump?
What you've got in the pump station is you haven't got one pump, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 pumps. So if that one goes wrong, they use that one. If that one goes wrong, they use that. If that one goes wrong, they use that. If that one goes wrong, it's not likely to happen that all four will go wrong.
How long will the concrete seawalls last?
We're going into structural mechanics now, aren't we? Concrete, let's just say sand ballast and cement powder, when you mix it up, it sets off, not because it goes dry in the sun, it sets by chemical reaction. So it sets hard. So if you mix up a load of concrete, and then you very carefully put a shovel full of it in the bucket, and then you very carefully top that bucket up with water, so it's underwater, do you think that concrete would go solid or not? It would go absolutely rock solid, the same as if it was in the dry air, because it sets by chemical action. They, depending on the type of concrete they've used and the type of mix, how much cement, what type of cement, how much sand, how big's the stones in the sand and the ballast and the rest of it, depends on the strength. But let's assume most concretes reach their maximum strength after 100 years, and then after that they start to gradually deteriorate. Now, it doesn't mean to say that exactly you can watch it and say, right, 100 years is up now, and then the wall falls down. It doesn't happen like that. It will still take another, say, 300-400 years. There's a famous building in Rome that the Romans built 2,000 years ago, and the dome of it, like St Paul's, but the dome of it's made of concrete, and it's still there today. And that's 2,000 years. That's not 200 years. That's 2,000 years.
We asked Bill to explain his role in detail.
Now then, what do I do when the phone goes in the middle of the night, as it would do, to say, Bill, I think there's going to be a bit of a flood? And do you ever think that phone's gone? In 22 years I've worked there now, do you think the phone's ever gone to tell me there could be a bit of a flood? About 20. But what they tend to do is they tend to over-exaggerate. The reason why is because it's better to be safe than sorry. So if the Met Office, along with other outfits as well, people like me as well, I don't do any forecasting really, if we think that it's going to be quite a high tide, and we tell everybody, all of us people, don't tell all the public, because they might start panicking, and thinking, we're all going to drown. It's not going to happen. People do panic easy. And then I take a careful look at the facts and figures, and I know exactly how high the top of my seawall is. I know how high that is. And I'm going to know how high that tide's going to come up. And so far, the difference between that height and that height is miles. I've never had it where the tide's coming up towards the top.
Will a flood happen again?
But it doesn't mean to say it can't happen again. Just because it happened once in 1953, it did also happen again in 1922, although it didn't quite break the sea wall. In 1922, there was only 2,000 people lived on Candy. In 1953, it was about 14,000. How many today? About 43,000. So in 1922, it was a farming community, really, and people, you know, were quite lucky. There probably one or two died, but not very many. In 1953, a lot of people died, I'm afraid. So global warming, will it happen again? Could happen again. We don't know when. It could be tomorrow, it could be next week, but I can tell you it won't be. I can tell you the reason why it won't be is because, first of all, I always look at the tide tables, so I know how high the tide's going to be. I also look at all the forecasts to know what kind of wind we'd have coming along, which, if you remember the wind, blows across the surface of the water and whips it up and makes it go much higher. And I know it's not likely to happen. It will happen again sometime.
What happens if there's a problem?
And you've got people like me and many others. I have a mobile phone, and then I have another mobile phone in case that one breaks. And sadly, they give me a third one. And then they give me three batteries for each phone. And if they shut down the network of phones in this country for other reasons, mine still work. And if they can't get hold of me, they've got a list of 10 people they can phone down and say, Bill, where are you? And I say, I'm on holiday in Spain. And they say, OK, fair enough, enjoy yourself. And then they get hold of one of my work colleagues, one of the people I work with, and say, hello, Dave, hello, Rob, hello, Pete, until they get somebody, and then we sort the problem out.
Should people move?
Why don't we move everyone off Candy? How much will it cost? Billions and billions and billions. If we've got to move everyone off Candy, we've got to build them all new houses. Then we got to move everybody out, and then everyone's, we've got factories on Canby, we've got all sorts of things. Cost too much money. So they built this extra big sea wall so it should withstand nearly every single storm that comes at it. It might, who knows, you know, it could be a terrible gale one day. It would be like a Hollywood movie where you've got this terrible wind and hurricane and everything else. So it's just slightly possible, but as an engineer, I'm saying that's very unlikely to happen. And if it did come over Canby Seawall, we've got 2 days notice first. Because they're going to tell me 2 days before, Bill, I'm sorry, mate, forget your weekend, forget your holiday, the tide's coming over the seawall in 2 days' time on Canby. Now that gives me 2 days' time to go around the police and say, everyone off. And we move all 43,000 people off Canby. So we should be okay. Then when the tide goes out and the water drains, people gradually go back to their houses, clean up the mess, get the insurance money. So will it happen again? Cost, balance, move everyone off, not likely. So really and truthfully, the difference between 1953 and 2011 is massive. We've got better weather predictions. We know exactly what the tide's going to do. We've got much better defences. We've got a whole system of officers, police force, and the army. If we need the army, I can call them in. Just say people will start getting in a traffic jam when they're all trying to get off the island. And say someone's dad doesn't like it that someone else cut in front. And then there's a bit of a punch-up. And then you get all sorts of things. The army is not going to shoot anyone, but they're going to say, come on now, chums, stop fighting. Behave in an orderly British manner. So we know what happened in 53. They built the new seawalls in 1972. Here we are today in 2011. And you should all be able to, if you lived on Canberra, you should all go, whew, thank heavens for that. Because it could, there's a slight, tiniest chance it could happen again. But pretty much not likely.
What chance of another flood?
One in a thousand. They say that one of those tides that we had in 1953, that's very high, they say that happens once in every 1,000 years, on average. Now, it doesn't mean to say it could happen in 1,000 years' time. It could happen tomorrow. But they're saying it's only one in 1,000 years. So you can never tell, really. The last thing, you can't really tell, but it's one in 1,000 years you get a really high tide like we had in 1953. But you can't really tell, you don't really know. We can be fairly sure, because the computers today and the way they work things out, pretty sure. So if you lived on Canberra, or even if you lived down in Benfleet near South Benfleet playing fields, where it's a bit flatter there, you have no need to worry. Because the sea walls and the protection that there is, and the way we look at things now, has changed, and you're pretty safe.
Bill Snow there from Castle Point Council.
We now close our documentary and hope that you have enjoyed listening to our work. Canby Flood was put together and produced by the Kent Hill Junior School Radio Club and parent volunteer Michelle Durant. The Kent Hill Junior School Radio Club would like to thank our family, friends and teachers, Gateway 97.8 Community Radio, BBC Essex, Canby Community Archive, Thames Barrier Education Centre, Angela Owen, Martin Banks, Jan Pearson, Richard Rankin, and James Milley, and anyone else who has kindly contributed towards our project we have forgotten to mention. For further information about the flood, please visit the Canby Community Archive website at www.canbyisland.org.